So after a discussion with a friend of mine the other day, I rewatched The Graduate. You know, it is a great, great freaking film, a seminal part of my as my childhood growing up. You know, I always had this fear of Mrs. Robinson. To me, she was one of the more haunting, if not actually the most haunting figure. You know, if I look back over the sort of images beyond the sort of horrors of my immediate life, but from afar and the forces that would come upon me, Mrs. Robinson loomed large for me. Something just I could not understand. I just couldn't understand what motivated her. She was so alien to me that it stayed with me, you know. And while she terrified me, there's also another understanding there, and that was an intimation. Okay, so not quite an understanding, but an intimation that what motivated her was something adult, something that had to necessarily exceed my whatever 12-year-old perspective, but that I might understand one day. You know, I know this is true. I also saw, you know, many, many years later, the Roman Polanski film Bitter Moon, you know, and it's of Peter Coyote and I remember the name, the actress who plays with them, but they, you know, the relationship becomes more and more sort of so-called sexually depraved, and, you know, and their sex games become more and more elaborate, costumes and masks, and I remember just, again, so confused by that as a kid. I was like, you know, why all that? You know, I hold my girlfriend's hands and I would, you know, finish in my pants, you know, like and then I'd be right back and ready to go again. And all I needed to do was hold her hand and smooch a little, maybe, you know, and that was just bliss. I couldn't imagine what this whole other thing was about. But again, I had an intimation that that was something about adulthood. And sure enough, now that I'm adult, you know, relatively speaking, at least physically, you know, I get it, man. Like, you know, give me the pig's mask. You know, give me the nun's outfit. I get it. But it made me think, you know, about the sort of the hilarity of sort of intergenerational politics and the sort of rise from the boomers of you know, the assumption that youth is just good. And that, you know, you never trust anyone over 30, you never trust anyone over 40. And that's really what The Graduate kind of gives us, right? You know, you get Dustin Hoffman, Benjamin, and he, you know, he's just worried about things. And he seems like, you know, especially when I was young, he seemed like all our sympathy is with him, you know, and the grown-ups just seem insane, right? They're just in their own world, they're deluded, they're blind. There's just something good about youth there. You know, when I watch it now, I'll say I have much more sympathy for Mrs. Robinson. You know, especially in the beginning. You know, she's direct. She knows what she wants. She's not a happy woman, but I get it. I understand. Doesn't mean that I she's the hero. But the plays of sympathy that I have now and that are different than what the film sort of demands of us. And I began to see Benjamin, you know, Dustin Hoffman, as a bit of an idiot. And the naivety that he expresses is supposed to be pure, almost like youth is a purity. But there's something really fundamentally strange, hilarious, and important and different about the relationship between, let's say, old and young, then let's say the difference between men and women or between so-called races. There's clearly a gap, a necessary gaping gap. I guess all gaps gape between, you know, a me and a woman, I suppose, right? I mean, we have different hormones. We're made up differently. You know, between me and an African American or a Japanese woman or an Aborigine. At the same time, we occupy a common space, right? We endure together. So we're part of the same spatial duration, if you will, right? And it allows for a kind of play of empathy. So at the same time as there's a sort of infinite gap between, let's say, between the genders, there's also a kind of fluidity. There's another register that speaks because we share that common space and endure in that common space together. As an aside, that's sort of how I always read Hans-Jörg Gadamer, you know, in his understanding of hermeneutics, right? That understanding is necessary precisely because we all become together, right? There is no fundamental outside or fundamental otherness or alien, because at some point we coexist. We are partaking of the same stuff. With age, it's funny because the gap between the 20-year-old and the 46-year-old is not spatial, right? We're sharing the same space, but our understandings are defined and inflected by a temporal gap, right? It's really another dimension, right? It's really that fourth dimension that separates us. And yet at the same time, what's funny is that for the 46-year-old, he was once 20, and the 20-year-old is going to be 46. So there's a fundamental intimacy, right? So if the difference between the genders is insurmountable by the raw physicality of it, but they're linked through a kind of temporal commonality with the gap, the differences between the 20-year-old and the 46-year-old is that gap is temporal as opposed to spatial. But then spatially, they will become the same body later in time, right? I mean, there's a kind of spatial supersession, right? The 46-year-old was always necessarily 20, right? I supersede the 20-year-old. Everything the 20-year-old has, I got, and 26 more years. And the 20-year-old will necessarily be 46. So they're really, there's something particular really about this relationship. And particularly there's something hilarious about this rise of youth culture and really the cult of youth that really defines really our whole culture. That I don't know enough about history, but at least in the popular understanding, really rises with the boomers. You get this reversal of privilege, and the way I can't help but think it's because they were the boomers. There was more of them. They just simply, it was like the democratic prejudice, right? The mob decided that youth is good because we're all young. But again, there's something so funny about that, right? For a 26-year-old to say, I know how things are. I understand the world. From my perspective, 46, I look back, I'm like, yeah, but don't you know that's going to change? Don't you know that's going to change? You would think so, right? After all, when you were 6 months old, you shat yourself and couldn't speak, and then you began to speak and, you know, shit in a toilet and walk. And even if you can't remember those changes, we definitely remember changes. We remember before puberty and after puberty. You know, when we were 15, when we were 20, things change. And our fundamental outlook, the horizon, and even the possible horizons change constantly. Right, as we age, which makes it again really freaking hilarious for a 16-year-old. We can all laugh at that, but let's say a 26-year-old, the 32-year-old, to come along and proclaim, to say, this is how it is. I know you, old man. You don't know, but I know. It's so deeply comical, right? Because you know everyone older than that 20-year-old sees the wave of change coming. I mean, it's right there behind him, right? I mean, it's you can picture the physical comedy of it, right? guy standing there saying, you know, I'll be on this firm ground forever. And that massive wave of inevitable time is just looming behind him like something out of a horror movie, or a tsunami that he just doesn't hear or know is coming. No, this is the way it's going to be. How do you get there? You've been through so much change up until the point when you're 26, and now you're saying, but now, you know, when I was 15, I didn't know how things were going to be, and I knew things would change. How could I? My horizon was limited, right? But at 26, now my horizon is infinite and exceeds yours, you 46-year-old, you 50-year-old, you 60, 70, 80-year-old. We know more. So literally sort of short-sighted, right? Like, you know you're going to change your perspectives. So how can you be, you know, so cocksure that boomer sense of entitlement, again, is so deeply, cosmically ironic, cosmically hilarious, which leads me to really the sort of point of this, which is, you know, we exist in time. We are of time. You know, we're not separate from time. We're not an object traveling through time. We are time. Right? This was, you know, Bergson's great observation, great contribution, great insight, you know, that time is constitutive of matter. It's not distinct from matter. Things are always splayed both through space and through time. And that splay of through time is a splaying, right? It's an action. It is active. It's becoming, right? Which is also hence the state of the space, right? The space is never fixed, despite how much of our sort of mathematics and scientific understanding and existential understandings and even religious understandings are often exclude time, right? We want to think about things spatially, and we take time as a connection of discrete spatial spots, right? On a pictured on a clock, right? It's that spot, then that spot, then that spot, then that spot. Bergson's great claim is that, you know, movement is not not the sum of spaces, of points in space. It's not the sum of those things, the move from A to B, from B to C, from C to D. It's not 1 + 1 + 1 + 1. It is its own thing, right? It is its own unit of a kind of extension, if you will, except it's an extension in time, what he calls duration. So again, the hilarity when I'm watching The Graduate and watching the kind of the implied sanctimony. The movie's very funny. It's very witty. And it really is just beautiful. I really do love this movie. But the sort of the place of sympathy, it's that rise of that boomer. Like we know more. We know more. Now, one of the things that makes that movie famous is is the last shot of Bannon and Lane on the bus. And the look on his face, right? That they're kind of quiet and they're smiling, and they're confident in its pure future. And then as the bus goes, and Simon and Garfunkel fill the screen, his face becomes more cautious, more thoughtful, more contemplative, more afraid. He doesn't know what's coming, which is the whole point. We never know what's coming, right? But you would think that the person who's older would know a little better than the person who's younger what's coming, right? What happens to our bodies? What happens to our understanding? What happens to our place of literal focus, right? Both, metaphoric focus or virtual focus. Maybe it's not metaphoric as much as it's virtual. Our focus of perspective between, you know, directly in front of me, my house, the streets, the world, those things shift. But also, of course, visually, right? My I my literal point of focus is different now, and it changes with some frequency. I have a lot of floaters now, right? I wake up and there's things floating in my eyeball. Meaning literally my vision, my understanding, my point of focus, my horizon is different because I'm older. The young person is going to be older. But for some reason, we have this, we've adopted this belief that the young people know better. And we all strive to be like them. As if there was a kind of purity or a kind of, I don't know. I mean, obviously there's a vitality to youth, and we love that, right? I love that. Who doesn't love that? Fuck, I love being young. And I look at young people, you know, I have a kid, he's 12. I look at that age. I look at, you know, I talk college. I look at those kids. There's a great vitality there, you know? But there's also, a necessary blindness, right? A necessary limitation. And what I would ask is, like, what is the posture of that, right? The posture, rather than insistence, rather than, I know, I'm 26 and I know more, you think it would become a posture of sort of irony. But the voice and the position that says, I at once believe this and know it's going to give way. Right? All pronunciations, all declarations of the youth should always sort of be uttered that way. And again, maybe because I had older siblings, when I was younger, I was aware of these things, right? I mean, I was a cocky little shit, but I also knew that there were things I didn't understand, and that I would, right? There was a whole world of adulthood that exceeded me, but that I knew at some point I would have the, I could participate, right? I would necessarily participate in adulthood, but I could participate in that adulthood. Those particular sounds, those particular foods, that particular kind of laughter, these particular kinds of relationships, these insights, and then even these sort of intimations of, you know, again, my youthful sexuality could not possibly fathom why someone was putting on a pig's mask. But I, at the same time, I didn't just say they're bad or wrong or nuts and I'll never do that. That has nothing to do with me. I had the idea that that might have something to do with me. And maybe that's why I always found Mrs. Robinson so haunting, in that she, you know, Anne Bancroft does an incredible job. I mean, her whole thing, man, her whole shtick is just outrageous. Again, when I was watching it now, I got her. I know her. She's not so alien to me anymore. And again, maybe my fear, maybe that haunting was that it was so foreign and so scary, and I knew I could become that. That there was a time, there would be a time in me, for me, with me, as me, where I will and could be that. It's that sort of that understanding, right? I mean, I feel like if we all just understood that we are of time, right? Like literally we're going to change. We're in a process of changing. So how can we ever be so sure of ourselves? How can we be so sure right now when I know everything's going to change? My perspective, my body, my very way of hanging in this world, my comportment. I mean, we change so much physically, and that inflects everything. And we're experiencing that all the time, you know? I find myself bringing up to my kid often how he was like when he was a kid, even though he's still a kid, because I want him to have this understanding. Like, and we crack up. Like, look, remember when you were so afraid of this or so excited by this or believed this or said this, and now you don't. And that will keep happening. That will keep happening. I'm at that point now where I wonder, you know, will that, what rate does that keep happening at? You know, I know it will keep happening, but at what rate? It's clearly changing, the rate of change. the duration of a day is very different for me than for my kid, right? I mean, he's 12. It means a year is a 12th of his life, right? A year is 1/46 of my life, right? Time is sort of elongated. At the same time, it's sort of accelerated. You know, a year of my life is just, right? It's 1/46, 1/47 of my life. A year of his life is, oh my God, that's a significant chunk in the pie chart that is my son. But what I'm trying to convey to him through these sort of stories and reminiscing and teasing of our former selves is that things will always change, and that's just the way it is, right? So never be that sure. The posture in life is a posture of flow, of things giving way, of dissipation at the same time as instantiation, right? Instantiation is in a constant state of dissipation. And sometimes these states of dissipation can be disconcerting and long. I've definitely had periods in my life, some that have been, you know, lengthier, where I'm not coherent. You know, there's a kind of radical dissipation. Things just not coming together. And I'm like, oh my God, am I just going to literally drift apart? But the answer is no. Things they gather together again in a different sort of configuration. And I know this. I know this keeps happening. And that knowing is irony. I am this and I am not this. I know this and I don't know this. I believe this and I know I might believe something else later. And I still believe it, and I'm adamant about my belief, and I also am not adamant in my belief. It's why sanctimony and certain youthful hubris is egregious, right? is sort of distasteful. Because at some point you have to know, right? You 20-somethings, you 30-somethings, that things are gonna change.